You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
I'm your host, Ebony Vines.
And I'm your host, Pamela Shandro.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Thank you. Okay. It's my turn now, I think, right?
Yes, it's your turn.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wait, is this a new episode? We have to do our whole
show. It's a new episode. It is.
Welcome.
What's up, Theater Geeks?
What is up? What is up? What is up? What is up? What is up?
It's another OG episode.
We've gone back to basics, back to before is what I was going to say before I realized that was a musical theater reference. Oh dear, we can hear the squeaky toy.
Oh no, yes, I can absolutely hear the squeaky
toy. We're going to get through this little early bit right here, and then I will promptly mute myself to give you all of the attention. Jeez. They were fine.
Like, nope, it's too late. I can't continue to be quiet. We can't do that.
they're like toddlers, you know?
I know.
Gotta just let them be. It's cool. It's cute.
It's fine.
You all know I have dogs.
Yes. They do. A thing I was going to say that we didn't say in the last one is like, we have a new logo.
Oh, that's right.
So peep that, friends. It's super cute.
Peep it. I put it on Facebook so you can all venture there to see it. I'm sure it's on our Instagram now. It is super cute. And it was drawn for us by a friend of Ebony's. Please give that information because everyone should know this woman.
Yeah. So her name is Jama McMahon. Yep. If you go to Instagram, you can go at Jama Hart, which is spelled H-A-R-T. Art. A-R-T. Jama Hart Art.
It's so adorable.
It's so cute.
He captured us perfectly. We are in cartoon form, but you can tell exactly who it is. It's so cute. I love it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I would want to like put on a canvas and then hang in my apartment. And I actually might do that.
Well, that would be fun. Speaking of that, we are creating a merch store. So yeah, it's already made, except we just have to get the okay for when I can launch it.
Awesome.
So we're going to have a merch store. So if you love the logo, you can buy a t-shirt with our faces on it.
Nice.
You can buy a mug with our faces on it that says Pamela's Famous Welcome. You can buy a sticker with our faces on it. You can get a clip-on on the back with our OG logo or the new one.
Nice.
Whatever you want. So peep that in probably the next couple of weeks, or it might be up by the time this episode is out. So you can have your very own little piece of our friggin' adorable logo.
So cute.
So and with the website, theatergeeksanonymous.com.
Okay.
But you know, also you can't get there from the BPN one, but the BPN one is where you can listen to the podcast and go through all the different channels and stuff.
Right.
All right, friends.
Ebony, I'm excited to hear this.
This week we're going to do, and I have butchered the name several times, and I probably will during the course of this episode. It is what it is. I don't know what to tell you. Summer. The Donna Summer musical. I have been calling it Donna. It's not what it's called. But guess what? It's probably what I'm going to say. Yeah. So just, I don't know what to tell
you. It's all right.
Well, first, as always, we like to make sure you all know where we get our information. Wikipedia didn't really have a lot. It's like kind of like a jumping off point. Also, Wikipedia is notorious for being inaccurate. But it is a place where we just like to be like, okay, where's like a jumping off point? I've already done it. For Summer, the Donna Summer musical, there's like hardly anything.
Oh, on Wikipedia? Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I used very little of it, but, you know, there's some things from there. There's a book called I Feel Love, Donna Summer, Giorgio Moroder, and How They Reinvented Music by Dave Thompson. So I have a little bit from him. There's also a Playable article about the workshop that's from April 26, 2016 by Andrew Gans and Adam Hetrick. And also a New York Post article from September 6th of 2016 by Michael Riedel. And I will also reference a few other articles just the same as Pamela did. Also, I have another article from Broadway Box, The Daily Scoop, April 20th, 2018 by Josh Ferry. So that also will have like a tiny little piece here or there from that article as well. All right. All right. Summer.
I can't wait.
The Donna Summer Musical.
I feel like it should be Donna, the Summer Musical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I know. It's not, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
No,
it really doesn't. I've got to do a lot of thinking, you know, to get it to.
Yeah. I feel like it really should be Donna Summer. Or the Donna Summer Musical.
Yes.
But like nothing, like, because it's slightly confusing, but also just difficult to say.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't call a Donna Summer Musical just Summer without the Donna Summer Musical.
Yeah.
So let's just skip that part altogether and we'll just call it the Donna Summer Musical.
The Donna Summer Musical, but I'm probably still going to call it just Donna. It's going to come out, I'm telling you.
We'll know what you mean.
So this musical, I'm going to start with some backstory. As you all know, I like to do. According to Robert Carey, who is one of the book writers of the book, Donna herself had wanted to create a musical about her life using her music before she passed away in 2012. Donna Summer's biographical musical was originally called Ordinary Girl. This is just to let you all know, this is not the show I'm talking about. So the show she wanted to make was called Ordinary Girl. Okay. She had showcased a handful of original songs from the production during a VH1 television special called Live and More Encore. The musical was to include her hits like Last Dance, She Works Hard for the Money, and Hot Stuff. So this was back well before 2012, obviously,
right.
Quite a few years ago.
Wow. Did it do anything?
I didn't fall down a rabbit hole with Ordinary Girl, but like when Robert Carey spoke to her 15 years before the Broadway musical happened in 2018, so that would have been about 2003 when he met with her. It still was just kind of like she was trying to get it to do something. And so he didn't necessarily have a conversation with her about trying to help that go forward. It was just he had like a 2-hour conversation with her. And he's really one of the only members of the creative team who was actually able to sit down with Donna and have interaction with her before she passed.
Oh, wow.
And that's because in 2016, that's when the workshop happened. So in 2016, a workshop of the musical then entitled The Donna Summer Project was directed by Tony winner Des McAnuff. And Tony winner, it was choreographed by Sergio Trujillo. It ran from June 22nd to August 6th with musical direction by Ron Melrose. And that was here in the city. It ran longer than the other show I'll talk about in another episode, Escape to Margaritaville. I mean, this one ran, the Broadway version ran for 289 performances.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it did feel like it came and went pretty quickly. And I think, you know, we might have been a little overrun too with musicals because it was like the 2018 year had a lot going on. So according to Michael Riedel's September 2016 article entitled Inside the New Donna Summer Musical, the workshop was a gender bender with women playing some of the men in her life. Katrina Lenk played Summer's Austrian husband and former manager, Helmuth Sommer, whom she had one child with in 1973 and divorced in 1976. So Sommer, his last name was spelled S-O-M-M-E-R. She changed it to S-U-M-M-E-R, which is really just the Anglican spelling, and then decided to keep it like that for her stage name. She was born, actually, LaDonna Adrian Gaines. According to that article, folks weren't sure that the gender-bending nature of that workshop said more than paying homage to the community of performers who impersonate her at clubs all over the world. So, I mean, it's like Donna Sommer is a big one that a lot of drag queens like to impersonate. Sources for that New York Post article also stated the script could have been a little tougher. It needs some rough edges and a little bit more drama. Right now, it's sort of an excuse just to listen to the songs and get up and dance. Tommy Mottola was producing the show along with the Dodgers. Everyone, I mean, most people know Tommy Mottola is sort of a behemoth in the music industry, especially.
Yeah.
You know, during Donna's time when she was in the height of popularity. All right. So after the 2016 workshop, Sommer, the Donna Sommer musical. Can I just say, we're not starting out well with this difficult title. Okay. I'm going to move on from the title, but I'm just saying.
You want to just say like Sommer?
Sommer.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying it's not a good omen. Do you know what I'm saying?
See. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Well, because, and I was even thinking of Ordinary Girl being that way too. It's like, you don't go to see a Broadway show called Ordinary Girl and think, oh, that's the Donna Sommer musical.
Right.
Like, such a weird, Ordinary Girl sounds like a really awesome musical theater piece, but it doesn't sound like Donna Sommer.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, again, this is not the same musical. What she wanted to do and what they ended up doing were two different things.
Yeah.
So, but this particular musical opened at La Jolla Playhouse on November 19th of 2017. Sommer was an in-demand ticket before the start of previews, which had begun on November 7th. Following an initial extension through December 17th, the La Jolla Playhouse announced a second extension for Sommer, and so it eventually ended up closing on December 24th of 2017. So ticket sales did quite well for its tryout. The show was brought to La Jolla, and when it was brought to La Jolla, the way that Des had formatted the story was that we'd go through Sommer's life while using her final concert as a focal point.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, which is similar to what they're doing with MJ Musical, I've heard.
Okay.
It's like, it's not his final concert. It's actually one from 1992, I believe.
Okay.
But it's still like the sort of focal point, and then the backstory is told from there up until that point.
Okay. Well, I like that. I mean, so far I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. And after this point, she basically, like, you know, becomes, she's like a mom and a wife, and she just really sort of revels in her home life. She has three daughters, and a husband that she had been married to since 1980. So from 1980 to 2012, she's married to the same man and had two daughters with him, and then one from her previous marriage. So that's what she was looking forward to after her last concert. LaShawn's in October 2017's article from the San Diego Union-Tribune, written by James Hebert. Now, LaShawn's was playing what they call Diva Donna. So there are three Donnas, and I'll go through them later on, but LaShawn's is the one, she's playing the one who's doing the final concert. So that's basically, like, quote unquote, the main Donna.
Okay? In her prime, in the prime of what we know Donna Sommer to be.
No, because technically Ariana DeBose plays the prime one because she's Diva Donna, and that's like the height of her career. LaShawn's is at the end of the career.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So LaShawn's stated in this Tribune article, this is what she said. While I'm very excited that this is a role for a woman, I'm more excited that this is a role for a Black woman. That, to me, is more of a rarity than roles for women in general. I mean, you rarely see a musical being told about the life of a Black woman. If you can think of another off the top of your head, I'll give you a quarter. So it's exciting for me that this is about an African-American icon.
That's awesome. And,
right? And there, I mean, I immediately thought of, excuse me, Caroline or Change, but it's always, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here just to sort of back up what LaShawn's is saying, right, is that, you know, people are like, well, what about Caroline or Change? Let's talk about a musical that's not about a down and out Black woman.
Yes. Yes. Because people right? can say The Color Purple too. And you're like, no, no, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that does the same thing.
Right. And eventually, yes, Seeley has her own business and like things get better towards the end. But the majority of the story is about how she's abused and neglected and poor and continuously called ugly. And while I love The Color Purple, I think it is a beautiful story. The rarity with which people of color, especially Black women, are touted as beautiful, as icons, as more than just strong, but like able to be feminine and vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's so rare to have that kind of a range. And so
absolutely.
I know that that was like really big deal.
Well, and Ebony, I would also say, and I don't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're talking about a musical based on an actual real Black woman.
Right.
And we don't get that portrayal in stage very often of a real woman. You get the portrayal of a caricature or a stereotype, but you don't actively get to see a life from beginning to end of just a Black woman.
Yeah.
Which
can
be just as beautiful as, you know, whatever other story that you might come up with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And to have one, you know, just so successful, you know, is like, and like, it's not, her life didn't end in drugs or some dark, like twisty thing. Like she did pass of cancer, but it was like, she chose to stay home and just revel in the joy of being a mom and a wife and have a family. And that's why her career ended. Because she was like, I just want to.
She ended it, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
She made the choice.
She made the choice. She's like, I did this. Loved it. It was awesome. Now I'm going to do this. And guess what? That's going to be great, too.
Yep. I love it.
And so then in the same article, Ariana DeBose, who is playing, as I said before, she's Disco Donna. So this is her in the 70s, like at the height of her career. She said, I knew of her growing up and I knew of her songs and I knew she looked like me, but I didn't understand the scope of what she actually accomplished until I started doing the research to audition for this piece. To my surprise, she was incredibly theatrical in the way she approached music. It's really all about storytelling for her. She's really rooted in character and that makes her exciting for me to play. I think you stumble upon your heroes when you need them. So she may not have started out as a hero for me, but she has morphed into that.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to say I love so much about being able to do this episode is that two of the people that I'm going to talk about today currently are up for Oscars. They have Oscar nominations. And Ariana is one of those people because she has an Oscar nomination for playing Anita. I'll later talk about the second person, but it's very exciting.
Awesome.
Now, I've just given you a bunch of really nice vibes. But even though audiences flocked to the show, the reviews were very mixed. So I'm going to give you a little wee bitty taste of some of the reviews from the La Jolla Playhouse production. Charles McNulty from the LA Times. When I first saw the poster for Summer a few months ago, I exclaimed, I need that. I've discovered, however, that I don't need this flimsy bio musical, and neither do you. This was quoted a lot.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. In a summer form not famous for literary finesse, Summer lowers the bar.
Oh.
Real, yeah. It's dark. The book by Coleman Domingo, Robert Carey, and McNuff is like a file in which all the bad things that ever happened to Summer are recorded along with the good. That's sort of life, though.
Mm.
The lack of playwriting imagination is startling. Now, I remember in the workshop, there was somebody else who said it just was sort of like a very flat bio musical. Like it wasn't, it was just like this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No drama.
Right. And so it sounds like, according to what Charles McNulty's saying, that sort of continued a bit, although it had a stronger framework because of deciding to use the one concert. It still could use some oomph. All right. And so I'm also going to read a little bit of James Herbert's Tribune review from the La Jolla. He said, that's of a theater that's of a piece with the larger issue of how the whole disco movement and the other artists involved in it are rarely touched upon in the show. Summer delves into plenty of its subjects' difficult personal struggles, although its treatment of her rift with the gay community comes off as an afterthought and a bit of a gloss. I'll talk about that in a second. But is less adept at showing why she and her music mattered so much to the wider world. And then Deborah Wilker from The Hollywood Reporter, because this is a woman and because I actually liked a lot what she had to say, I'm going to end. This is going to be the last review I read for the La Jolla one. I'm going to read the whole thing. So Deborah Wilker from The Hollywood Reporter and writer-director Des McNuff Summer, the Donna Summer musical, it's her mistreatment that's hammered home. Men abuse, manager steal, cancer comes calling, but worst of all, her art is derided. This retelling of Summer's life not only examines an ebullient era in music, but aims to give the trailblazing songstress her rightful place in pop culture. But this show moves almost too fast. Despite its missteps, there is still so much to like about the Donna Summer musical, particularly the three women portraying the title character in different phases of her life. Broadway veteran LaShawn's 2006 Tony winner for The Color Purple is a marvel as the assured rafters-raising diva Donna. Ariana DeBose, an original Hamilton ensemble member, more recently of A Bronx Tale, the musical, is both nervy and vulnerable as anguished midlife disco Donna. And young Storm Lever, a real find, is a scene stealer as duckling Donna. Moments when the three sing together produce all the requested, requisite. All the requisite chills.
Perfect. Yep. Duckling Donna. That's cute.
Isn't it cute?
I like
it's
that.
It's cute. And like, that's literally what they classify her as. It really
yeah.
is. Okay. All right. So this is the road to Broadway a little bit. Now I referenced, cause you might've listened to, I don't know if we've posted that yet, but you may have listened to our episode about Good Vibrations. But that I said Cher, the musical, was coming out right after. So it was like the dueling divas, sort of. And so the producing team decided to bring Donna Summer's musical to Broadway ahead of the Cher musical. According to a New York Post article from December 2017, just said it, the producers of Summer decided to move the show to Broadway ahead of Cher. Michael Riedel stated Mottola and his producers.
Wait.
Oh,
You just said Michael Riedel stated.
No! Okay, I'll go back.
I'm Stadled. Leaving it in. Really funny. I'm sorry.
Oh,
but please actually go ahead and start again because now I'm understanding you're saying that they opened preemptively so yeah. that Cher didn't get there first.
Right. Okay. Because, you know, and also like Tony Awards.
Yeah. Okay. Right? That makes sense.
Right. So Michael Riedel said, Mottola and his co-producers, Dodgers Productions... are confident that those killer tunes, coupled with a slick production by director Des McAnuff and choreographer Sergio Trujillo, will overcome stuffy critics who can't dance. Both musicals show their diva at three different stages of her life. In Summer, Storm Lover plays Duckling Donna, a gawky kid who grew up in Boston in the 1950s, sang in church, and landed a role in A German Tour of Hair. Ariana DeBose.
I did not know that.
Yes.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I have to go back. There's one of her songs. I mean, she does it a lot. And it's in the show, one of the songs from Hair. I'll click it in at the end. Huh?
The Aquarius?
I think so.
Okay.
No. Black Boys.
Oh, she did that song?
Yes.
I've heard that. Oh, how fun.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. White Boys.
White Boys.
Black Boys is the white girl.
Is done by the white boys.
Yeah. Yep. All right. And then Ariana DeBose takes over as Disco Donna, who, under the guidance of record producer Giorgio Moroder, storms the charts with Love to Love You Baby, Dim All the Lights, MacArthur Park, Heaven Knows, Hot Stuff, and of course, Last Dance. All those hits plus a few lesser known gems make up the score. All right. So Summer, the Donna Summer musical, began previews at the LaFontaine Theater on March 28th of 2018 and opened on April 23rd. So this is like right at the Tony Awards deadline. The cast and creative teams included a book by Coleman Domingo, Robert Carey, and Des McAnuff, songs by Donna Summer and Giorgio Moroder, scenic design by Robert Brill, and our second Oscar nominee this year, costumes by Paul Tazewell.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, he did. He also did The Wiz Live. Remember those costumes?
Yes.
Did
those
Hamilton.
Were amazing.
They
the
were.
Whole, I mean, listen, that was a good live TV
yes,
performance,
it was.
Period. But the shining spot on them was those costumes.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's freaking awesome.
Especially in the No Bad News scene.
Yes.
Which is also my favorite costuming in the movie. But
yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
So good. I'm so excited for him. I don't know him personally, only have like talked to him on Twitter. He's so nice.
You I hope he wins. On Twitter? That's so cute.
Yeah.
So awesome. Nice. Awesome.
Lighting by Hal Binkley. The cast included LaShawn's as Diva Donna. So that's Mary Gaines. Ariana DeBose is Disco Donna and Storm Lover as Duckling Donna, also known as Mimi. All right. Bruce Sudano, who was Donna's second husband, was played by Jarrett Zerilli, and Drew Foster played Helmuth, the first husband, and Kaylee Cronin played Giorgio, and Ken Robinson played Andrew Gaines. Ariana DeBose and LaShawn's were both nominated for the Drama League Distinguished Performance Award, which is an award you can only get once in your lifetime. The show was nominated for Outstanding Production of a Broadway or Off-Broadway Musical, also by the Drama League. LaShawn's and Ariana were both nominated for Tony Awards, LaShawn's for Leading Actress in a Musical, and Ariana for Featured Actress in a Musical. And you'll remember why those, even though they played technically the same part, because, again, the show surrounded her final performance. LaShawn was technically the leading actress because she's your way into the rest of the musical. All right. And so the show closed on December 30th of 2018 after 289 performances. And it began a national tour in 2019. Now COVID happened.
Yep.
A few months after that, so I am not sure. The tour website is still up. I didn't look to see if it is. It's been announced several places, and I think there's a few regional productions that are happening as well, because it is definitely out for licensing at this point. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people love her. So although it actually, the Broadway production got pretty decent reviews, it wasn't, they weren't amazing, like sort of blow your top off, you know, reviews. And, you know, there were some stinker reviews, people who were like, no, ma'am, no, ma'am. And I know people who saw it and weren't, they didn't love it. But
Broadway,
you know, everybody,
there's a high bar when you pay that amount of money to go and see a show.
Right, right, right. And so, it's so clearly like, honestly, it's like a tourist.
Yeah.
Grab.
Yes.
I mean, this show really deserves to be in Vegas.
Oh, right? My gosh. It would be amazing as, yeah. as a Vegas show. Yes.
Yeah. That's really honestly where it should be. Like any smart producer would just put it there.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's like a Jersey Boys is there or was there for a long time. Also makes a ton of sense to me.
Yes. I did see it. I saw Jersey Boys in Vegas. And they had, I mean, they had some, you know, when you move to Vegas, it has to be one show continuously, no intermission, 90 minutes tops. So there is some manufacturing that you have to do to your show in order to like let it fit. But Donna Summer screams Vegas.
Oh, totally. Totally. And it, the running time was small enough that it could work.
Oh, nice.
It really, really could work there. Yeah.
Great.
It had 23 songs, and I believe it was like, I think it said 105 minutes. So, you know, it really could. But I think that speaks to, you know, what Deborah was talking about, where she felt like it just was sort of speeding through because it's really short, you know. And
that's
so
very short because most Broadway shows are like at least 2.5 to 3 hours.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, again, like it would make such a wonderful, Vegas show. So I didn't see a Vegas announcement there, but like maybe at some point somebody will get that bright idea who wants to produce this, out there. And, I mean, I think it's a good idea. you know, so that's it. 289 performances, which is not terrible. It was $12 million to put up. Didn't make its money back, but like $12 million right now, not terrible.
No, reasonable.
When you're looking at, you know, friggin' Moulin Rouge, which is so high in number, they won't tell you.
We're like, hey, so how much did it cost for you guys to put on Moulin Rouge? And they're like, look over there. Do you see that big red dress? That's a beautiful dress. We made that.
The elephant. You like that, right? That's cool.
Right.
Cool, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll come out at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of like speculations, 25, 26, maybe 30. But it's like when you listen to the songs themselves, you know, you're like, it's so expensive to get the rights.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. These are all the top 20 songs. Yeah. And now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I mean, that's what I've got. I mean, just the reviews were kind of mixed.
Yeah.
There doesn't really seem to be any bad blood, which is nice.
Yeah, that is good. You know, it sounds to me like, at least what I'm hearing is that she just led a really nice normal life and didn't have a huge amount of hills and valleys to climb out of or climb over. So,
well, from a couple of the things I read, there are some bumps there, but it feels like somebody's kind of surfing over the waves. You know what I mean? Especially
they didn't want to delve too deep.
Yeah. And again, like it speaks to why Deborah said it felt so rushed, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you can't do every peak, you can't do every valley.
No.
But if you just pick a few that you feel like are real, like, big milestones, right? Because they say everybody has like at least three huge milestones in their lives. If you just pick a handful of those and you say, we can touch on everything, but we can kind of delve into like these three or these five.
Yeah.
Then you feel like you've got some ebb and flow so that when you get to the mountaintops, they feel higher. And when you get to the valleys, they feel lower, and you take your audience on a real journey through emotion. And if you're just trying to kind of skim and get through it all, it just, you're not having the same emotional connection to your character. Right.
Well, and like, there's something to be said about the timing of it too, and how long you sit in a place before moving on. I'm reminded of, there's a scene in Jersey Boys where Frankie Valli has just discovered that his daughter has died.
Yeah.
And it's a very powerful scene where not a lot is going on. He's literally sitting with his back to the audience on a bench, and it's just quiet. There isn't a song to accompany it. There isn't a huge scene to accompany it, but it's an important moment in Frankie Valli's life, and therefore the Four Seasons' life. And so they put a button on it.
Right.
They said, we're going to sit here for a second in this uncomfortable place because it's important for us all to go through. And you're right in that everyone's life has those little moments that you have to put a pin in.
Yeah.
And in telling the story of someone's life, spending just a little extra time in those places, because those places are formative in a person's life.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny thing that I said I was going to mention and didn't. Same director as Jersey Boys.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right. Huh. So I really think that was like another factor. They kind of felt like, you know, he had done such great work with Jersey Boys that he would be able to take this and kind of like do those types of things with it. But like, I don't know. I don't know if there were too many cooks in the book kitchen. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that could be like
there were three people working on it all at the same time.
There were three people. Yeah. I mean, also Jersey Boys has the benefit of having like Frankie still alive. And I think like one other member, you know?
Yeah.
So there's something to be said for when you're writing a musical based on the life of somebody who's still with us. Mm-hmm. Now, Donna's husband is still alive.
Okay. Her current husband at the time that she got. Okay.
He's still alive. And
and her children.
Yeah. Her three daughters. And so I saw him with some of the creative team.
Yeah.
And so they must have had like some conversations with him. But the thing is like, again, they got married in like 1980.
Okay.
And so the height of her career was really during like sort of like the 70s and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure he knows a lot about like her life as much as one can. But he probably knew way more, obviously, of like the after the concert.
Sure.
Because that was their life together.
I wonder when Donna Summer was actually involved in focusing on Ordinary Girl, if there was information that had been written at that point.
Yeah.
Like, was that information used? Could it have been used? Do we know who the writing team of Ordinary Girl would have been or was?
I mean, that
would be interesting to find out too. And I know that you, because it's hard, because you have to kind of pick and choose the rabbit holes you fall down when you're doing this research. But that's it. I mean, those are interesting questions to kind of find out and see, because I know you had mentioned that one of the writers of Summer, the Donna Summer musical,
well,
had
so
spoken to
Ordinary
her.
Girl is a book.
Oh, right? Oh, so right.
It's a book by Donna Summer and Mark Elliott. I didn't see Mark Elliott's name anywhere on anything.
Okay.
But let me see if he is even still with us, which could be.
But the book was published. Ordinary Girl, the book was published.
Yeah, that was.
I don't know why. When you said that at the beginning of the podcast, I thought that she was wanting to turn Ordinary Girl into a musical.
She was.
Oh, okay. But there is. Okay.
There's also a book.
Gotcha.
Which I didn't, but I didn't know when you were asking about that. I was like, well, let me look up some more about Ordinary Girl. Cause I was like, if I go down, I didn't want to do it while I was doing the research.
So yeah.
I'm going to go down a rabbit hole. I'll never get this finished. I'll be inside Ordinary Girl world instead of freaking this one.
Right.
But yeah, so it's a book, but there, again, I didn't see anything about them purchasing the rights for the book.
Right.
You
interesting.
Know,
interesting.
So I, if anyone who's listening knows whether or not they did or knows somebody who is in the, creative team, you know, always add us at, on Twitter, TGAB way, or on Instagram, same thing, or email us. And, when we do one of our intermission sodes, I'd love to add that. If you know if they purchased the rights to it, but
yeah, or even
when I was
were
doing my research,
inspired by it, like that would be interesting too to see if like they had show notes at all. I'm sorry, my dogs are like chomping at the bit to go eat something, so everything is being destroyed right now. But that would be an interesting thing to find out whether or not Mark Elliott was approached, whether he said no, whether he wanted a part, but the creative team of Summer, the Donna Summer musical, didn't want to go that route. Who knows?
Because, I mean, there's one of the articles I read is like a whole article about if Donna were alive, like what were the questions you'd ask her? And again, the only person who was able to meet her before she passed was Robert. So, you know, I hope the book was read. I'm sure the actresses, I'm sure at least one of the actresses probably read the book. Because that's what actors do, is like they're very good at... trying to do as much research as they can, especially the younger ones who, like, you know,
no inkling who Donna Summer was to begin with. Yeah.
Right. I mean, at least Ariana knew who she was, but of course, you know, she's young. So,
well, I mean, even me, I know who Donna Summer is. I know the songs that she sang, but I would be very hard pressed to tell you anything else about her actual life.
Right. 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 In doing the research for this musical, when I found out she had a husband and three daughters and left to be basically a stay-at-home mom. That's how I learned that. Yeah. Is working on this episode.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, so, but it's nice to hear she had what sounds like this, the latter half, was really nice.
Well, that's
so
lovely.
Bless her heart, except for the cancer.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah.
The cancer was apparently she had, smoked very young, but for a long time was a non-smoker, but also lived across the street from the 9/11 towers.
Oh.
So there's speculation that it's a mix of used to have it like smoked in her younger years, being across from the Twin Towers, and then maybe also like secondhand smoke. It was just like all of it together.
Listen, I mean, the rules that they have and the laws that they have in place about smoking inside buildings was not existent at the time. So you would go to those clubs and it would just be in a cloud of cigarette smoke.
Totally. Totally.
So I would imagine that part of that has to do with it.
Yeah.
But the twin, in Twin Towers theory is also.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's what she believed was the thing that really, bless her. So that's it, friends. The Donna Summer musical. This is definitely on Spotify. Her stuff's fun.
So it is fun.
It's fun. So I'm just saying, if you need a pick-me-up, go ahead and listen to it.
Totally.
And
everyone knows Last Dance, but then you're also like, I love to love you, baby.
Yes.
Like,
it's
I
like
love
how the show
that
starts.
Song.
Yes.
How fun. That's fun.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like she's got some good tunes. I think it's like one of those things where sometimes I get a lot of those disco artists mixed up. So like Gloria Gaynor and Diana Ross and Donna Summer are all kind of interchangeable sometimes because you're like, they were all the same time.
Like, I don't know about the Diana Ross one. But I can give you Donna
you're
and
right.
Gloria.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Because Diana Ross she had a very specific sound.
Yeah.
But like all of those, like I Will Survive, you're like, that could have been Donna Summer. But you're like, no, that was Gloria Gaynor.
Yes.
Okay, The Last Dance. Well, that could have been Gloria Gaynor. No, that was Donna Summer. So in that respect, and because they were at the same time as well, sometimes it's difficult to kind of figure out or pick out which songs belong to who.
But it, you know what? Just do a mix. Put them all in there. Put Absolutely. Both ladies in there.
Listen, I just get on Pandora.
Give yourself a dance party.
Totally. I just go like, hey, Alexa, play Donna Summer on Pandora. And then it comes up with all of those different artists. It's fun.
So good.
Yeah.
Do it. All right, friends. That's our episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABWAY and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
And if you want to tell us how much you love us, or you have a great story about one of the shows we've talked about, drop us a note at
TGABWAY@gmail.com.
Until next time, geeks.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.